And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Let me tell you about tonight's guest. Charlotte Harris-Reese is the author of Secret Maps of the Ancient World and also produced an abridged and edited version of her father's text, The Asiatic Fathers of America, Chinese Discovery and Colonization of Ancient America. Now, she has spoken about her research in many locations, including Beijing at the Library of Congress, the University of London, Stanford University, University of Maryland, the Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, British Columbia, Portland State University in Oregon. She's been all over. This summer, scheduled to speak in Malaysia and at the National Library of China. And here is Charlotte Harris-Reese. Hey, Charlotte, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good to have you with us. You know, this is fascinating. Cause when I was talking to my producers last week, and I'll tell you how you came to us, by the way. It's a neat story.
Okay.
Your last name is spelled a little differently than the map, the Piri Reis map that was compiled
right.
in 1513. And I was thinking, though, before I saw your spelling, I'm saying, I wonder if there's any relationship. That would be ironic.
No.
and you know, that map alone, did you ever study that map, the one from 1513?
I have looked at it briefly. No, that hasn't been a main focus of mine.
It's really strange because it has to do a lot with Antarctica. And, you know, you always wonder, how did these people know 500 years ago plus what things look like when we really don't even know what they look like still?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just amazing. And, you know, the same here. Tell me a little bit about this story here with your father and the secret maps of the ancient world.
Well, my father was born in China in 1916 to Baptist missionary parents. And as early as he learned English, he learned Chinese, and at the same time learned Chinese myths and Chinese legends. And then later in life, he became a missionary himself. And so he spent many years in the Orient. But later in the Orient, in 1972, he ran across in an antique shop in Korea an Asian map, which showed Fusong. Now, Fusong was a country that they talked about in the legends, this fabled land to the east, and it was called the beautiful country to the east, and the map actually showed where Fusong was, and it was the American coastline. And he said at the time, he became so weak he had to sit down. He said, oh my goodness, you know, this is showing exactly where Fusong was, and it was America. They were coming to America.
Charlotte, this map, which is, it's kind of difficult to you know, pick up things.
Right.
I've been looking at it at your website, harrismaps.com, and we've got a link with the map at coasttocoastam.com right now. It is a little confusing, so explain it to me.
Okay. Okay. You have to start out realizing it's a very primitive map, and everything is really not to scale, especially in the water in the ocean area. If you start looking at the middle, just like the 1602 map that's being shown at the Library of Congress right now, China and Japan, Korea are in the middle. And then if you move to the left or to the west, you'll see Africa hanging down like a sack. And then above that, you can see the Mediterranean and Europe above that. And then if you move to the far right side, that's where North and South America would be, that arch that looks like a circle, but it's arching around. And if you take a globe and look at it, that's really the way that the Americas do. They actually form an arc. And even on the 1602 map and on a current Chinese world map, North and South America arc around like that.
Based on the map, what are we theorizing here?
Well, we're theorizing that Chinese came to America at very early dates. Now, there was a Chinese document that was written sometime between 2200 and 2000 BC that talked about Fusong and talked about Fusong in detail. And so this actually measures up with that, what they were talking about in this document. Now, at one time, there had been a map, reportedly been a map, with this 2200 BC Chinese document, which is called the Shan Hai Jing, the Book of the Mountains and the Seas, or a geography book. And in the Shanghai Jing, they actually went to all ends of the earth. But what I've concentrated on is the Eastern journeys.
So you're saying basically the Chinese came to this portion of the world, the coastlines of North and South America, 3,400 years before Christopher Columbus, right?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Well, the archaeology is adding, is showing that too, both in Asia and in the Americas. You know, that there have been peanuts that have been found in China in more than one location that date before 2000 B.C.
How might they have gotten here?
To China?
To the North and South America regions.
There are powerful currents in the ocean, and even a very small boat, if it's caught in this current, it's like a riptide. And, you know, anybody that lives near the ocean is familiar with how a riptide acts. It will just drag you along, and you have to purposely get out of it, or you will end up on the American coastline. In fact, anybody can just Google Pacific Ocean currents and see how these currents work, that they actually drag things over from Asia to the Americas. And they've dragged many ships, disabled ships, they've dragged them over, and a lot of different things they've dragged over.
What do you think the size of the ships might have been? You know, remember the old Thor Heyerdahl Kon-Tiki episodes where he was in, you know, a smaller raft-like boat to try to prove where they went. How big do you think this boat might have been?
You mean the very first one?
Yeah, if you had to guess.
Oh, you know, I don't really know, but I know that they still on the coast of South America have some of the old raft-type ships with the centerboards that they can actually get the boat to go in the direction that they want it to, and that would enable them to catch the current. Some of these rafts, they said, were big enough that they had a house on them that could hold 100 people. You know, Asians are usually smaller than Caucasians.
Yeah.
You know, probably wouldn't be 100 Caucasians in there, especially
right,
with the size we are now.
And I assume once they landed, did they go back or did they just stay?
Well, for the peanut to be over there in Asia, somebody had to go back.
That's right. That's right. Stay with us, Charlotte. More to come as we talk about the secret maps of the ancient world in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Again, our website is harrismaps.com. There is a link right now at coasttocoastam.com. Also, we'll talk about how the Human Genome Project is confirming now that Asian DNA is present in the majority of Native Americans. That could also prove that they came here a long time ago. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're with Charlotte Harris-Reese. Charlotte, why do you call it the secret maps of the ancient world? What's so secret about them?
Well, it's a real-life, actually, Da Vinci Code type thing. these maps are similar maps like this have been in museums for years. And people declared that they were part real and part imaginary. And it was my father, I'm told now, it was my father who was the one that realized that these were real maps. What's ironic about these maps is that usually they're in serious government books, and they which contain information that only a government official would own. And I was even told that if a private individual had owned these map books, that he would have been executed because other maps in the books contain information about where the people would hide if the country was attacked, where the wells, water wells are, where the military posts are. So, you know, they had confidential information in them.
The maps themselves seem to be pretty accurate. You know, and when you look at the fact that they're 3,400 years old, possibly, truly incredible. Have they been dated at all, carbon dated?
Okay, our particular maps have not.
Have not. Okay.
They have been viewed by experts, and based on the cities that are on the other maps in the map books, they've told me that they're Ming Dynasty. So Ming Dynasty was 1368 through 1644. So they're somewhere in that period of time. But the maps are co-owned by me and six siblings, and I don't have the permission to cut a piece out of them to have them carbon dated. But really, the issue is not our maps. It's when did this style map originate? And that's what I argue about, is because there's information that this style map is hundreds, if not thousands, of years old.
That is amazing. What are the maps made on, Charlotte?
Ours are made on paper.
Okay.
But what my father contended from the start is that ours are copies of copies of copies.
Ah, okay.
Okay, and 72% of the place names on there are from the Shanghai Jing.
All right, let's talk about the significance of this. So 3,400 years ago.
Okay, actually we're saying 4,000 years.
4,000, mm-hmm. Right, give or take 600 years. still way before Christopher Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, people of Asian ethnicity came to this region of the world. What's the significance of this?
You mean the political significance?
Well, no, I mean just overall. I mean the fact that they got here way before Columbus, one would say, that's interesting. What does it mean?
Well, it means that they had an advanced civilization at that time. In 2000 B.C., the Chinese had writing. They were making silk. There's archaeological evidence that they were ocean-going people at that time. So it just shows that they were advanced people. And what's amazing in the archaeological finds in the Americas is that suddenly civilization sprung up about 4,000 years ago, starting about 4,000 years ago, full bloom. They had a writing system. They had architectural style.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no explanation how these civilizations sprung up.
Now, when you talk about the Asian DNA as present in the majority of Native Americans, let's talk about that. And also, might it have also been in the Aztec culture, the Mayan culture, or are we just talking about Native Americans?
Well, I think that I would classify all of them as Native Americans. Now, let me say from the start that I'm not a scientist, and I'm not an expert on DNA, but my book, Secret Maps of the Ancient World, I have put a chapter in there about DNA, and I've relied on the research of other people. But one of the things that I found was interesting was that my father, even in 73, one of the things that he wrote, he said, the history of Asia is written into the stones of America and into the bodies of its early people. And so he recognized that there were physical characteristics that the Native Americans had that were the same as Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was even before people were using DNA. There were certain blood characteristics. There was a physical resemblance. There's a resemblance of the teeth, the shape of the teeth. Also, Asian babies are usually born with a blue spot on the buttocks, and many Native American babies are born with that same blue spot.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not so.
See, you learn everything on this program, Charlotte. My gosh.
I was speaking in Oregon this past fall, and a PhD came up and asked me afterwards. She said, do you mean to tell me that Caucasian babies aren't born with a blue spot on the buttocks? And I said, no. But, you know, you don't normally see a baby's bare bottom.
Why isn't this a headline story? Why isn't this Columbus may have discovered America in 1492, but back almost 3,400 years before that and more, this is what happened?
Well, see, I think it should be a headline story. And there have been a lot of people who have been trying to tell this story. And so what I have done is, in my book, Secret Maps of the Ancient World, I've tried to bring the research studies together and bring all these studies together and mention as many as I could so that, you know, how can they deny this any longer?
So, now, let's talk about the political ramifications. You know, there's no question on Columbus Day, it's a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people celebrate Columbus Day. Is there information being suppressed anywhere which should get this information out?
Let me start by saying it used to be in American history books that Chinese had an early presence in the Americas. My father had an old history book that was from the early 20th century that said that. And when I found that out, I went to my research mentor, because I didn't get into this research until after my father was dead. I went to my research mentor, Dr. Cyclone Covey, who's at Wake Forest, and I said, "Is this true that it was used to be in American textbooks? And if so, why was it taken out?" And he said, "Well, about the time that Columbus Day was introduced, became a national holiday, because, you know, it wasn't until the 20th century that it became a national holiday. In fact, late in the 20th century, but it was early in the 20th century that it was taken out and people were starting to celebrate Columbus Day, that they took this information out of American textbooks."
Where did they go, though, Charlotte? You would think, other than, you know, the majority of Native Americans having some Asian DNA presence, which you contend and which some others contend.
Right.
Where did they go? You would think that there would have been more of an influence then in this country with the Chinese, with the Asians.
Oh, the Asians went all over the world. You know, Asian DNA is spread all over the world.
But I mean, in terms of, you know, when we came in, you know, we being the Anglos, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, when the Pilgrims landed and all that. I mean, were there many Asians on this land? And that's my question. Why didn't they all come here in masses?
Well, they were here. There were something, by some estimates, 30 million Native Americans just in North America. So these were descendants of the Asians, and I believe that they had come at many different times. There are many different tribes, many different groups, many different languages among the Native Americans. And but what happened was, in history, in the early 1400s, there was a Chinese admiral named Zheng He, and he had enormous ships. And they've actually proven this, because they found parts of them. There was, in the July 2005 National Geographic, a big spread about this. But his ships were so large that if you set it down in the middle of a football field, it would be longer than the length of the football field and wider than the width of the football field.
Huge.
Right. It was, okay, so remember, this is just before Columbus. Columbus' largest ship, it could have fit 10 of his largest ships, the Santa Maria, into one of Zheng He's ships. And so Zheng He was making different trips, traveling around the world. So the Chinese had developed that capability of having these enormous ships. But in 1433, when Zheng He went back from his final voyage, then China shut down to the outside world for several hundred years.
Yeah.
And it became a capital offense to go to sea. The ships, many of the ships were destroyed.
Jeez.
The maps were destroyed, and the people forgot where they had been.
See, that's what fascinates me. When a culture is so advanced, years ahead of any other one, and then all of a sudden it just seems to fade away, or the advancing seems to stop. You know, I know the Chinese developed the gunpowder. They, you know, were great with herbal medicine and things like that. But something, if they had that kind of progress going on in the BC period, why did it stop?
They shut down to the outside world. I'd like to read something from Jeffrey Martin. It's just a short statement. It's from his All Possible Worlds, A History of Geographical Ideas. And he said, "Students steeped in Western history must keep in mind that from about the 2nd century before Christ until at least the 15th century after Christ, the people of China enjoyed the highest standard of living of any people on earth."
Hmm.
So they were, like you said, they were advanced people.
Oh, there's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed to be. But we know what they were like when we finally got behind the wall, and now they're just starting to come back again.
Right, right. And it could happen to us, too, you know?
I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about that. Let's just hope we don't shut down too much.
Right.
Seems to be the in the big. Where do people get the secret maps of the ancient world?
They can go to my website, www.harrismaps.com. And if they go, I'm doing a coast-to-coast special tonight and giving autographed copies. Not giving, but selling autographed copies.
What?
of Secret Maps of the Ancient World and also the Asiatic Fathers of America. And there's also a novel that's been written about this, and that's for sale on that site, too.
Why did your father start believing this? What really convinced him?
Well, I think it was seeing that map.
Just the map alone did it?
Well, I, you know, there were many different things. I, you know, because he was from the West, but raised in the East. You know, he knew the geography of both places, and he could read Chinese when he saw the map and knew what it was saying. He knew the myths. He probably, when seeing the Native Americans, he suspected. You know, there's so many people that said, this makes sense. You know, we've suspected this for years, but, you know, back to the DNA studies. Could I go back to that just a minute?
Yeah, because and tell me, who did these studies?
Oh, okay. These studies were mainly done by pharmaceutical companies. And they were done.
We don't trust a lot of them.
Well, they were done because different ethnic groups respond differently to different medicines.
Right.
For instance, the Asian children sometimes have hallucinations from taking Tamiflu, which people use, you know, with the current flus that are going around. So they have to test the different ethnic groups. And so these studies were mainly done for that. They were mainly done by Caucasians, so it's not Chinese people that are making this up. And I have most of my information, or a lot of my information, from a PhD microbiologist, a book that he's written called Losing a Lost Tribe by Dr. Simon Southerton from Australia. And there's an interesting story that goes with that, too, because Simon Southerton was not only a microbiologist, but he was also a bishop in the Mormon Church. And when he found this information, he realized that it contradicted what the Mormon Church was saying, and which says that the Native Americans are the lost tribe of Israel. So he took this information to the Mormon Church, and then he ultimately quit the Mormon Church, and then they excommunicated it.
Why isn't the Chinese government exploiting this story?
I don't know.
Do you think they should?
I think they should. Yeah, I think they should, you know, jump on this and check it out. But in that book that he has, Losing a Lost Tribe, he puts together the information of testing of 175 different Native American tribes. And there's also something on YouTube that people can go to, and it's called DNA versus the Book of Mormon. You know, if you don't want to read the Mormon part of it, you know, go to the end of it where it really discusses the DNA. And there are four main groups of DNA. They're called haplogroups of DNA that are found only in Asians and Native Americans. And they're the haplogroups A, B, C, and D. And that's what the majority of Native Americans are. Now, a small amount are X. And that small percentage is found in Eastern Europe, but it's also found in the north part of China. So these A, B, C, and D are all found in Han Chinese. And then, like I said, X is also found in the northern part of China. You know, I would prefer that somebody read his books or read other information, other studies on this, but DNA is showing that the Native Americans are from Asia.
That's fascinating work. Do other scientists jump on these possibilities, too, and those historians?
Yes. When I spoke at the Library of Congress in 2005, and at that time, the person that spoke on DNA, it was at the Jung Ha Symposium, and the person that spoke on DNA came up and he talked to me, and he said, yes, the DNA does show Asian DNA, but it's from a long time ago, because there are, over a period of time, very slight changes in the DNA that shows that it is Native American DNA is distinct from Chinese or Asian DNA, but it's still from that same haplogroup.
So when did your father pass on?
He passed on in 81.
81. So here we are, 2010. What would he be saying today, Charlotte, had he been with us?
I think he would be happy that I'm working on this. I would certainly hope so, but I think that he would be very happy that I'm working on this now.
You're basically keeping his work alive, aren't you?
Well, you know, for many years I was a skeptic. When he first did this, there's seven of us were just starting out in life as adults, and we were busy with other things.
Sure.
We weren't really interested. Other people were skeptical of what my father wrote at that time, and so why shouldn't we be? You know, we weren't the experts. But then in 2003, I actually read Gavin Menzies' book about 1421, The Chinese Coming to America in 1421, and I thought, oh my father, maybe he was right. I better check this out. And so I've been on a big search trying to find out if he was right, and I'm thoroughly convinced now that he was.
Fascinating. Okay, Charlotte's website, HarrisMaps.com, HarrisMaps.com, her work, Secret Maps of the Ancient World. And if you're into old-time ancient history, this is a fascinating story and an incredible read as well. Charlotte, thank you so much for being on Coast to Coast this hour. Truly appreciate it.